The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. All right, y'all, welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. This is episode 33.
Episode 33. Do you have my, what do you think of the new intro?
It's it's very calming. Okay. I like it.
Yeah,
I like it. It's less elevatory.
You really hated the last one. So
I kind of disliked it. I liked our old. I'm kind of like, I don't like change.
See, yeah, I liked it at the start, but then I kind of got old for
okay.
me.
Well, yeah, I like switch it up, man. You know? Spice it up.
Yeah.
So, every challenge holds with it the seed of an equal or greater benefit. And so we're snowed in here in Texas under a quarter inch of snow,
maybe a little less.
And what that is producing for y'all is we're able to like push out this like super high quality content and we're bringing you all the people that, you know, and
all
love.
The people.
And, and if you don't know and love them, you will. I am super pumped. Now we've been working on this for a while. I'm super pumped to introduce y'all to Aust from Homesteady. And we've been trying to coordinate our schedules and whatnot, and it finally happened. It took us. It took a blizzard.
Yeah,
on both ends, right?
Yep. Aust, welcome to the Fearless Podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good to be on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for. I'm glad our schedules could line up here. Yeah. And for those of you that don't know, Homesteady has a YouTube channel. They also have an excellent podcast.
Yep.
And the quality is incredible.
On par.
It's just really good quality, very entertaining, educational,
family friendly.
It's just a great resource. And then Aust, Homesteady itself has all their own resources and website. Yep. They have a Pioneer. What's your subscription program?
Our Pioneer program. Yeah, that's kind of our catch-all of, you want to learn more about homesteading? Do you want to get, you know, learn more about off-grid life, milking cows, building chicken tractors, whatever it is? We got a little bit of everything in there. And
high quality.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been following Homesteady since the very beginning.
Yeah. Probably since the podcast.
Almost so. The podcast.
That's old school days, guys. This is our 10th year.
Wow. So you're way more. Okay. So let's talk about this. Let's do an origin story.
Sure.
Let's talk about, so you're 10 years into this podcast. It's Homesteady. So you're at least 10 years into homesteading. You guys, you're a family of eight and you're a young family. And so maybe tell us kind of what you did before homesteading and what led you in that direction.
Yeah. All right. So like all good origin stories, right? This is not where we started. This isn't anything what I looked like at the beginning of the story. It was grew up in town, no farm animals, no experience with chickens or cows or hunting or all I did. The one little sliver of homestead life that we still have today was I was really into fishing. Other than that, just grew up like a kid in town. We didn't have much land. We had a family dog. So that was about it. And met my wife, Kay, who you see on our channel and on the podcast. And she's a farm girl. She did grow up with this life. She grew up not quite at the level that we run things here now, but she grew up with farm animals and that whole thing. We met, neither of us at the time were living on the farm or living a farm kind of life. We were, you know, just traveling. And when we first met, we thought we would just kind of keep doing that, traveling. We weren't planning on kids. Well, 6 later, here we are. So things changed there. And pretty much that's where everything changed for us. The minute we decided, the minute we found out we were having our first kid, we realized, all right, well, things aren't going exactly as we thought they were going to go. So now we have to kind of pivot. And our life pivoted completely. We went from, you know, thinking we were just going to travel and, you know, see the world to, well, we don't want to have an only child, so let's keep this going. And we want to feed our kids the best we can and give them the best life that we can. So how are we going to do that? We were pretty broke at the time when I first came along, and we wanted to be able to feed them good quality food and, you know, have a nice life. But we couldn't afford, you know, organic food or, you know, pastured meats or anything like that. So we started trying to get creative. And creative at the time, we were in a third story apartment. And creative meant, well, you know what? There's a little patch of grass down at the bottom of our staircase. So Kay said, you know what? I could grow some vegetables in that little patch of grass. And we didn't own much more land than that little patch of grass. So I thought, you know what? There's animals walking around the woods. We lived in Connecticut at the time. In the state of Connecticut, there are way too many deer. They're practically a pest control animal in some parts of the state. So I thought, I'll learn to hunt, and Kay will grow some vegetables, and we'll try to do the best we can with the very little money and very little time that we had. I was working full-time in construction, and she was had her hands completely full with a newborn baby and everything that that brings. And so we both started figuring stuff out. And that was 14 years and change ago when this all kind of started. And I knew nothing about hunting or butchering or livestock or animals. Kay had experience working with the animals and a little bit, you know, but not at the level that we do things now. And we grew from there, and we can get into all the details, guys, but that's kind of what, you know, having our first kid, that was like our motivation, the spark that lit the fuse to now. If you fast forward, we live on the family farm. We pasture beef, cows like you guys got, and livestock, pigs and sheep. And we have a dairy cow herd operation here. We don't buy meat. We butcher everything here on our homestead. We grow some fruits and veggies a little bit, but most of our operation is livestock. And awesome. Yeah, that's where we're at today.
Yeah, so walk us through that. So it's one thing. Okay, so you start having kids. You realize we need to provide for them in a holistic fashion. So that's a very common backstory for a lot of people. Either they have a health emergency or they have children and they say, you know what, this thing is bigger than me. But so you go from apartment dweller, you know, using what you got, where you're at with what you have and the little patch of grass. Right. And then you're going to expand and scale to do this homestead thing, develop all these new skills. Right. And your full time construction. But then you're going to complicate it by a factor of 1,000. You're going to become a content creator. Maybe that happened.
Yeah. So you nailed it, right? It's a big juggling act, like you guys know all too well. We built, when you look back in what is going on 15 years now, right? It's 14 years and change of this whole journey. When you look back, it is just a never ending journey of a couple little steps forward and usually a few backward at the same time, learning new skills, learning new things, and going in different directions, trying to explore and figure out what you're good at, what you like, what you don't. So our first year of us becoming homesteaders, it was me hunting and Kay gardening. And that was a year of complete failure. My first year of hunting, I walked around the woods a lot. I was learning how to bow hunt at the time. I had never used a gun before. I was not familiar with firearms. I did not grow up in a house that was comfortable with firearms. So for me, it was very foreign to even get into the idea of hunting, let alone guns. So I started with a bow. Figured, you know what? I'll start with the bow and arrow and we'll go from there. So I walked around the woods with a bow and arrow in my hand. I scared a ton of animals, never even got a shot off at anything, but I learned a lot. Kay, she started in the garden and she started with some peppers and some tomatoes. And the neighbor, we were in an apartment, so we had neighbors underneath us, came out one day and weed whacked up all her tomatoes. And later on, she had some peppers that were actually growing. They were getting there. They were peppers. They were still green at the time. And we had a friend come along who thought he had a green thumb and said, oh, your peppers are ready. And he picked them before they were ripe. So she got nothing from the garden. I got nothing from the woods. It was a huge failure. And if you let failure stop you, that's where homesteading would have died, right? We wouldn't have been here talking today. Yep. We would have had a failed patch of grass and an expensive bow. But we just failed and kept going. And that's how we got here today. A lot of failures, but pushing through and learning from it. Our next year, early in the archery season, I got my first deer. I had learned a lot from my mistakes. And the following season, I got out there and I was on the ground hiding behind a rock with my bow and arrow when a doe came over the hill at 40 yards. And I took the shot and got my very first doe. And that was a huge experience in the world of homesteading. Some people, I find homesteading, the world of hunting isn't as popular as I personally think it should be. I think hunting is a great way to be a homesteader. But one of the areas of learning that you get with hunting is the butchering. And a lot of people will take their deer and drop it off at a butcher and get somebody else's deer back. But not us. We were doing this to save money and we could not bring this to a butcher. It would have ruined the whole money saving thing. So we just figured out how to do it. I had a Field & Stream magazine because 13 years ago when I got my first deer, YouTube was not the resource it is today. I had a Field & Stream article in one hand and it was sprinkling that day. And I was outside in the rain, hiding underneath a tarp with my Field & Stream magazine in one hand and a fillet knife in the other. And I was just like, all right, start at the spine and go down. Okay, here we go. All the way down. Figuring out as I went.
Awesome.
The beautiful thing about butchering, as opposed to like carpentry, when you're trying to build a chair and you take your saw and you cut something wrong, well, you have to throw that away. That's waste, right? But the beautiful thing with butchering is when you cut something wrong, well, now that's burger. So right. There's no waste. So I just learned as we went. I figured out with that Field & Stream article how to get through our first deer, and it wasn't perfect, but we got a lot of burger, so that was good. And we brought it inside and we learned how to make burger and we learned how to make sausage and we learned how to vacuum seal product. And at the same time, Kay's garden the next year did a little better. So we had some tomatoes and we had some salad and some peppers. And the next year we were having our second child, my oldest daughter. We decided it was time to get out of the apartment and look for a place. And at the time, the idea was, you know what? Let's just find a little piece of land that's real, real cheap. And we were still real, real broke at the time. So we thought, you know what we can do? We can find a little scrap piece of land that nobody wants. It'll probably be off-grid because we won't be able to afford to be on the grid. Those pieces of property are more money. We'll find a little off-grid piece of property. And we'll put a yurt up because yurts go up quickly and they're inexpensive for how quickly you have a structure. And that was what we were going to do. And we told our parents, hey, we're going to move out of the apartment and we're going to move into a remote piece of property with essentially a fancy tent. And Kendra's father said, no, you're not with my grandbaby. So he helped us find our very first farm property and he helped us finance the property. And we were able to get into a little 10-acre farm that already had a house. And it was wonderful that we had, I know not everyone gets help from family like that. So it was really, really special. It helped us get a leg into the world of homesteading and farming earlier than we could have. We would have definitely been set back in our yurt. We were able to get a little family farm. And through that 10 acres, we were able to expand into livestock. We got some chickens, we got some cows, we got some pigs. And actually on that 10 acres, we pretty much had every animal you could fit on the 10 acres at some point in that journey. And so we slowly grew from that apartment to that family farm. And at the same time, I was learning, you know, that whole time as we went, we were learning. A lot of the learning I was getting was from podcasts because I had a construction job and I had to drive to work every day. I couldn't watch YouTube. And again, YouTube wasn't even as big as it is today. So I would drive into work. I had a lot of times a 2-hour commute and I was trying to teach myself how to be a farmer, how to start a business as a farm. We wanted to start a little farm business. And so as I would drive, I would find these podcasts to listen to. And this goes way back. If you recognize these podcasts, then you guys probably will. There was Tim and Liz. Did you guys ever listen to Tim and Liz?
No, maybe once. Yeah.
Okay. So Tim and Liz from the Farm Dreams podcast, they were one of the very first farm podcasts that I stumbled across that I started listening to. There was another one, Hunt, Gather, Grow. I don't remember who hosted Hunt, Gather, Grow. But that was a good, helpful podcast, very low production, not a lot of, at the time, you know, podcasts for farming, just finding one was a big deal. So there wasn't like a lot of fancy production. It wasn't a big thing podcasting at the time, but I would listen to these guys, hear their stories. And then I also listened to some business podcasts, some marketing podcasts to learn about how to grow a business. And I just loved podcasts. And then I also would listen to NPR podcasts. I thought, you know, I would learn about homesteading and then I would learn about business. And then I would, my brain would get so fried and full that I would just listen to something like, at the time I would listen to Radiolab, because Radiolab at the time was a very interesting sciencey podcast and they had all kinds of cool sound effects and very high production quality. And I would learn something about science that, you know, something new. And so I would listen to the three different kinds of shows and I really nerded out on podcasting. I would tell all my friends, hey, have you ever heard of podcasts? Oh, podcasts are really cool. Oh, man, I listen to – it's like a radio show on your phone. And again, this is 14, 13 years ago, podcasting. It was before Joe Rogan had a show. You know, it's just a new thing at the time. So I kind of thought this would be a fun thing to do. I grew up in high school really into video and audio production. You can see the guitar behind me. I actually had a music recording studio. That's how I met Kay, my wife. We worked together on a music project and the rest is history, as they say. So I was always into audio video work and I thought I would like to make a podcast. That would be a cool thing. And we could talk about what we're doing on our farm. And I pitched the idea to Kay and she was like, no, that sounds like too much work. We got the farm to do. We got the animals and the livestock. We can't do another thing. And so I'm a guy who likes new ideas and I get bored easy. A couple months went by and I started thinking about running a food truck. I was like, oh, you know what? We're growing all this meat. What if we started a food truck? And my mom, she loves to cook and she was looking to do something at the time. I was like, what if we started a food truck with my mom? And Kay said, what if you started that podcast? So we went back to the podcast idea. And that's how homesteading started.
That's hilarious. And then homesteading started how long ago?
So homesteading, this is our 10th year. We started in 2014. May 2014, the very first episode of the Homesteading podcast was launched. And at the time we had been at our farm, I want to say we'd been at the farm for a couple years at that point. So we had gone from just having chickens in the backyard and me being a hunter to chickens and pigs and goats. And the podcast in the early days was really learn as we learn, right? Join us as we learn. We were not experts in anything agricultural at all. We made lots of mistakes. But at the time, as I told you guys, I like to listen to these other podcasts like Radiolab and these other things where they would go and interview people. And so what I thought was, you know what if we took our podcast, what if we, because we're not experts, what if we go and interview people about these things? What if we ask experts? Because if you know anything about working with farmers, right, you guys probably bump shoulders with a lot of farmers. Most farmers, especially the old school ones who are good at it, quiet, right? Not really social media types like you see today. But wealth of knowledge. Yeah. So it's like, what if we could get these guys who don't want to, you know, they hardly want to talk to you at all. What I'm an extrovert. I like taking a hard nut to crack, you know, break it right open. I like trying to, you know, get people to share their stories and teach the things they've learned over the years, the life lessons. What if we found these people and we went to them and we interviewed them and shared that with our audience? Because I like to tell stories and I like this podcasting thing. So we started doing that. We started going and finding experts in, you know, chickens and experts about cows and experts about goats, people who didn't have social media accounts and never would have wound up on YouTube, but had just really good information to share. And we were not afraid to ask the questions because we were brand new. And then I could spend my time being an audio video producer, making it sound different and sound cool. And when we launched the podcast, the idea was I wanted to make an NPR quality podcast, something that could be played on National Public Radio, I wanted to make something that was that quality, but for the world of agriculture. So our podcast, episode one, had music and sound effects and interviews and guests. And we spent a month building this one episode. And at the time, every other podcast out there was doing like a weekly thing. And we were very different because we were once a month, but it was high production value. And we did that for a couple years. And I honestly feel that's what helped us become a full-time content creator with Homesteady, because it set our show apart. We wound up on the front page of iTunes, featured, new and noteworthy, right next to, on one side was a podcast featuring Oprah Winfrey and another one, Bill Clinton, and us right in the middle. And it was on the front page of iTunes.
Oprah status.
Just for 2 weeks. But hey, you take those 2 weeks and you use them as you got them, right? Me and Oprah. I'd rather bump shoulders with Oprah than, you know, Bill on the other side. But there it is what it is. So there we were on the front page of iTunes. And we got a lot of new listeners and a lot of traction. And at around the same time, we started doing YouTube, and we were able to tell people, hey, by the way, check out our YouTube channel. And this, again, we started our YouTube channel 10 years ago. Actually, it was in the winter of starting the podcast. It was like December 2014, and we didn't even do regular YouTube content for another year or so. But because we had the podcast, we told people, hey, go check out, we have an extra video up. If we did an episode about fishing, we'd throw a fishing video up. If we did an episode about goats, we'd throw a goat video up. And so it kind of built, we built the farm, we built the content side of things, and we were trying to build our own business actually as farmers. And as you guys know, that's a really hard way to make a living, right? Trying to make a living off of the product, off of pork, chicken. That was our idea at the time, pork and chicken. And at that time, I started bumping shoulders with the John Siskovich of Farm Marketing Solutions, who happened to be my neighbor. And anybody who has chickens, meat chickens, has probably built themselves a John Siskovich chicken tractor. He was actually a neighbor right up the road from me, a friend, and it's a good friend of mine now. So we were building at the same time in the same town. We were trying to build this farm business, pastured poultry. And John's podcast and his YouTube channel is called Farm Marketing Solutions. So I was trying to sell pastured chicken in a town where Mr. Farm Marketing Solutions was also trying to sell pastured chicken. And needless to say, he sold a lot more chicken than me. So after a year or two of trying to do the farm thing, we realized, you know what? We're getting a lot of traction with the YouTube channel. We're getting a lot of traction with the podcast. The farm direction, it's a great way to feed ourselves and friends and family, but we stopped trying to become farmers full time. And we just focused on the educational content and growing our homestead. And we were able to, with that kind of lifestyle, start a part-time business with Homesteady, which allowed me to go part-time on the construction side. That allowed me a lot more time on the homestead and building up our business. And then over time, we were able to transition to doing Homesteady full-time. And now today, that's all that we do is we run the business, which if you're new to Homesteady, if you don't know what we do, we really pride ourselves on being an educational channel. We really try to focus on education and helpful content. We don't do a lot of vlogging. There were some time periods where we experienced and experimented with it a bit, but more nowadays and in the early days too, it's really been primarily educational content. And always through our experiences, the things we're learning, we're never afraid to tell you when we're learning something new. We'll share the failures, we'll share the learnings, and we're not afraid to ask questions of experts who are better than us. And we've been very, very fortunate over time to work hard on this Homesteady channel and our homestead at the same time, homeschool our kids, build the business together as a couple. And we're fortunate we get to spend every day on the family farm with our animals, our kids, me and my wife. It's honestly, it's just a wonderful life. And it took a long time to build. And like I said at the beginning, a lot of mistakes were made and it does not happen overnight. But anybody looking to make a big change, it's going to take a long time and a lot of work and 100%, 110%, as you guys know, worth doing. So, you know, it's hard, but it's worth doing, and everybody's path will look a little bit different, but start now.
What would you say from starting your social as a content creator to going full time? How long did that take you?
We started Homesteady in 14, and it was 2 years before I even made a dime. 2 years of producing content before I monetized anything. As I mentioned, it was a hobby of mine, right? Recording music, editing videos, editing music. It's something I had done since I was a kid in high school. It's fun. I like telling stories. I like adding sound effects and music and bringing something to life and sharing a story and inspiring people. And I like making an audience laugh. I like making an audience cry. I like to share this, you know, this whole storytelling thing. It's something I'm really into. So for 2 years, we did it just for fun, just because we wanted to. And we saw the traction was there. So there was always the thought that, oh, maybe this could be something. But for a while, it was just for fun. After 2 years, we decided, you know what, let's try to actually make something from this. It'll help pay for the time spent, because it was hours. My schedule, when we were early days, so we had just moved to the farm, our 10-acre farm in Connecticut. We were trying to start a farm business, so we had chickens and pigs. We were doing pastured pork, pastured poultry. We were teaching classes from our homestead about how to butcher, how to work with goats, how to work with chickens. So we were doing all the agricultural stuff. We were starting this Homesteady podcast and then the YouTube channel and growing that. And I had a construction job and at the time, 2, 3, 4 kids as we grew as a family. So all the everything that comes along with, you know, having a lot of kids too. And Kay was doing the homeschooling. So, you know, it was a lot of juggling, right? We thought, you know what? The time investment is big. Let's try to make something from it. I would wake up in the morning at usually about 4 in the morning and jump on the computer, and I would spend 2 hours in the morning editing, and then I would go out and do the barn chores that I had to do, and then I would get my truck, and I would commute into work, do construction all day, come home, have some family time with the kids and Kay, and then tuck everybody in for bed, go back to the computer, and I would edit from usually 10 to 1 or 2 in the morning. I was getting very little sleep, not a very healthy lifestyle. But we realized that with the traction the show was getting, we could turn it into something, and then I could take time off to do it if we were able to make some money from it. So we shifted. We started the Pioneer program, which we talked about a little bit at the beginning there, which was basically we saw everybody was doing Patreon, and I didn't like the idea of putting my business in the hands of some platform solely. We've always produced Homesteady very holistically. So some people became like just a YouTube channel and just made money from YouTube. Some people started a podcast and had Patreon. We always wanted to make sure that if YouTube pulled a stunt or if Patreon decided they don't like, you know, homesteading or whatever it was, we wanted to survive and make sure our brand survived that. So what we did was we created our own membership program, and you just our own website, and you could join up. And what that got you was in-depth educational content about homesteading. Again, not with us teaching at the time, because we were just learning. But what it would get you is we'd go to a farm and we would spend 2 hours on that farm grilling. You know, if we were at a family dairy, we would grill them with all the questions we had, just 2 hours worth of, you know, how do you handle the milk? How do you process it? How do you clean it? Nobody wanted to watch a 2-hour video on YouTube at the time. So we would edit that down to a really fun 25-minute, you know, vlog or, you know, 25-minute video, but there would still be 2 hours worth of educational stuff that got cut. And that would wind up over for those who really wanted to learn more about the homesteading lifestyle. They could dive into it on the website. So we built that Pioneer library up and we launched it. And our first month, we got a whopping 10 Pioneers at $3 a month. So we had $30 coming in from the show. Our first $30.
There you go.
And you just grow from there, right? It wasn't long after that we were able to monetize the YouTube channel. And I had not realized our YouTube channel was eligible for monetization for a couple months, and I just didn't know. So I flicked that switch on, and instantly we got a check for $900, which was like, whoa, that's huge.
Wow.
But that had been like 6 months that I didn't realize we were eligible. So then the next month we made like, you know, $75. But you just grow. You grow over time. And I say a lot, it's like with homesteading, we understand this concept with homesteading. And sometimes we forget this with our life and you know what we expect in our lives. With homesteading, you plant a you know, an apple tree. And if you do it the wrong way, you take a little teeny tiny apple seed and you put that in the ground and you wait 5 or 10 years before you even see any fruit, right? If you do it the right way, you take an apple, you know, a little starter that's been grafted onto good rootstock. And even then, with a 1 year or 2 year old apple tree, you put that in the ground, you still have to wait 5, 6, 7 years before you start to see fruit. And it doesn't peak for another 5 or 6 years, depending on if it's a dwarf or a bigger tree, right? So you plant a tree and it takes a long time. But once a tree starts producing, then you get this overflow to the point where you're like, hey, friends, family, you want to come pick apples? Pigs eat the apples. We can't keep up with it. So we've tried to, over the years, with our homestead, with our business, with our holistic growing homesteady, holistically plant trees as much as possible. So it's slow in the beginning and it takes a long time to monetize. And even then it's laughable. But if you see the tree is growing and the fruit goes more and more every year, eventually you can make the leap. And for us, that took about 3 years of part-time to the point where I was able to quit construction. And even then I had to kind of do a little bit of work as a video creator for other people. So I had Homesteady Now, which was my own brand and my own business, but I couldn't feed my family off of Homesteady full time. And the farm and Homesteady was doing its thing, but I still needed some money to pay the bills and keep the lights on. So what I did was I had this content business here doing Homesteady. I helped other people build their YouTube channel. So I'd go and make videos for businesses. I had a food channel I worked with for a long time producing food videos, which is really fun because I'd go and do these shoots. And she was a culinary instructor and she'd cook a lot of delicious, amazing food. I got to learn a little bit about cooking and I always got to take the leftovers home. So that was great. It was a win-win. And a couple more years of that till we could finally say, you know what? Homesteady can do it all. And even then it was less money than I was making working in construction and with my own AV business. But finally we were able to just do what we wanted at our homestead and share that and then, you know, build up our educational content. And we've been doing that now just before we moved to a family farm in Pennsylvania, which was going on 6 years. So it's been 7-ish, maybe 8 years of full-time homesteady. And it's starting to get up there. There has definitely been a shift in our channel and our growth. We used to never teach anything. It was all learning and all learn along with us and we'll ask the questions. Now we finally figured out how to do some stuff pretty good. And hi, buddy.
It's been 6 years since you moved to Pennsylvania.
Home studio. You get walked in on at times. You guys know. This will be our 6 year, believe it or not, 6 years in Pennsylvania family farm, which seems, I know you guys have been following. I think we did some content with you guys.
We did.
A collab back at the Connecticut Homestead. So put it in perspective. And that would have been probably the year before we left because we had just gotten our cows and then we decided to move to the family farm in Pennsylvania where we are now. And so that would probably, this is going on 6 years, so that would have been about 7-ish years. So you guys would have just about started your guys' YouTube channel when we did that. Yeah. And so we're going on 6 years in Pennsylvania. And it's been a big shift because now we've been doing we've been raising our family's meat for over a decade now. We don't buy meat from the store. Once in a while we'll buy something funny. You know, we want to, you know, have some seafood or something. But like we don't have to buy meat from the store. We do all our butchering, all our own stuff in the backyard here. And, you do a batch of meat chickens every year for a decade. You finally figure out how to do it. And so we've been able more and more to help other people, which has been really, really exciting to see just the growth in the last couple of years, how many people have wrote in and say, hey, you know, I've learned, I watched you guys, I got inspired, I got my own place, and now I'm doing it too. And we've seen people pass us by in farm size, and we've seen people start YouTube channels from their homestead and pass us by, and just all kinds of cool stuff. So it's been really cool to see long-term how this stuff just grows like an apple tree. It just grows and grows and grows.
And that's neat. So you mentioned how your in-laws helped y'all purchase your first homestead property. And that's really kind of what motivated us. You know, we didn't, we had lots of different circumstances where we strategically relocated kind of like in the middle of nowhere with no friends and family around. But one of the things that really motivated us with procuring property and dirt is trying to create a living legacy for our children. So that way we could accumulate dirt to pass on to them while we're living so that we can share in the process and share in the infrastructure construction and maintenance. So now that y'all are on the family property and you have six children and they've grown up in this lifestyle, where do they see themselves in the process? Are they embracing the homesteading lifestyle? Or what do your kids think about all this?
Really good question. And you know, TD, you got kids and every one of them is unique, right? You see some different aspects because homesteading is such a big category, right? We could have a magazine about homesteading and you flip through the pages and one article is about hunting and one article is about canning tomatoes and one article is about how to treat an alpaca with something wrong with its foot because alpacas always have something wrong with them. You know, right? You can, like, there's so many things. That's one of the beautiful things about homesteading is just there's so much opportunity. And as a family who homeschools, it's a nice way to let everybody kind of take their interests and go in different directions. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we have from the ages of my oldest was going on 2 years old when we moved to our first farm. And he was there with me when we found my first deer. The very first deer that I talked about at the beginning, he was on mama's back. We were walking through the woods looking for the deer. So he's been there for everything. He's been there for every, and he's, he's a teenager now. So he's been there through the whole journey. And all my kids subsequently have been involved in all our growth, all this stuff. And we've always included them in different ways. So according to age and interest, we'll go in different directions. And then also there's some things that we just want to instill in our kids, a good hard work ethic, right? Whether you're interested or not, you're going to help clean up the cow poop in the barn, right? You're just going to help clean the barn. So we kind of, as the younger ones, they start off with very simple tasks. We have them collect the eggs, you know, help spread wood shavings if we're cleaning up a stall, you know, fill in water buckets, turn on the hose, fill the water bucket. The little ones are involved at very easy tasks at a very young age. So really, you know, and this is every kid's different, but from 2, 3, 4 years old, they're out there in the barn, just in the safe areas, just exploring and learning. And trust me, when you send the 2, 3, 4 year old to get the chicken eggs, you guys know half of them are going to wind up on the floor. That's why you get a lot of chickens. But they're learning, right? They're learning as they go to the point where now, my oldest, and I'm sure you've seen this, TD, where your oldest, we can send them anything non, you know, we do have a bull and we have some cows on the property. We had Highlands for a while, put our kids in a situation that was dangerous. So we would keep them away from those areas. But every other area, you know, that on the farm that they can go and do the work, they can do everything. They're completely capable. They are more capable as teenagers, young teenagers, than most of my adult friends who come to visit to work on the farm because they don't know what's going on in a farm, whereas my kids can give the tour and tell them how everything works and show them how everything works. So partially as they grow older, we let them choose things that they're interested in. And then again, you're part of a family on the farm. We want to instill work ethics. So other directions will say, hey, this is under your jurisdiction now. So for example, my daughter really, really wanted to get goats. And you guys know how I feel about goats. You've been following me long enough. If you follow the homesteading for 10 minutes, what'd you say, TD? Draft out there.
Yeah, you feel the same way that we feel about goats.
Yes, goats. I had sworn them off forever. They were never coming back to the farm. And of course, my oldest daughter says, Daddy, I really miss the goats. Can I get my own goats? I don't own goats. I never will own goats again. But she does. So she's really into the goats. She wanted to have dairy goats. We got a really nice group of little Nigerian dwarfs, which are an amazing little goat. Yep. They're not as good at escaping because they're short. They have really good quality milk. And they're just fun. Even I'll admit, they're a fun, cute little animal. So we got back into goats. So like my oldest daughter, she has this whole herd of goats. She has them bred. She does their feet. She's 12 years old. She clips their feet. She gets them bread. She gives them shots. This girl is completely, now we're there helping her along and teaching her and making sure everything's, you still need some oversight, right? They're still not ready to take it on completely, but she's so self-sufficient in her goat herd. She milks them by hand. She brings the milk inside. She can use it in products. So just, it's awesome to see. My oldest son, who's a teenager now, as he gets older, he takes after his dad a bit more. He loves the fishing in the woods. He's not so into the livestock thing. So he doesn't have any particular livestock of his own. But we'll give him projects throughout the summer to help with because you're part of the family and that's how it works on a family farm. So for example, this summer, this spring and summer, we're going to be raising meat chickens and he'll be helping. He's at the point now where he's completely capable of running a John Siskovich style pasture poultry operation. He can fill the waterers, fill the feeders, move the chicken tractors. He's getting those big, strong teenage arms and shoulders. So he's able to run that operation, manage that, feel what it's like to have responsibility over something really important, right? One of the things, you guys have probably seen this, I feel when kids, we give our kids chores, right? To teach them good work ethic and responsibility. And there's chores that are like, fold laundry and do the dishes and clean the kitchen. And that's good hard work and it's good for everybody to learn. But if you don't do the laundry, if you don't fold the laundry, nothing dies, right? True. But if you don't water the chickens, they could die. You can't weasel out of that one. You got to get there for those animals. So there's a level of responsibility that farm work, I think, teaches a kid that you just can't teach. And I even see it in myself versus Kay. She is 1,000 times the farmer that I am. That one, there's a reason our channel has succeeded at helping people, inspiring people. It's because Kay is great with farm animals. Aust would have gave up and been living, in a van somewhere a long time ago. But Kay grew up on a farm. She grew up taking care of the animals. She understands. She sticks to it. I've learned as we go over time how to have that farm work ethic. But I didn't get that as a kid because I feel like without a farm, you just can't get that farm work ethic. Our kids are fortunate. They're getting to learn hands-on, taking care of animals, caring for creatures, making sure it's blowing snow out. Blizzard-like conditions. We had wind gusts yesterday. We're 40 miles plus.
Wow.
Got to go out and take care of the animals, right? Yeah. You can't sit inside and be cozy for the day. So you just learn real hard responsibility. And as they get older, we've told them every kid, my oldest are getting closer and closer to needing a car and they're not there yet, but the time will come. Yeah. So we've opened the possibility to them and said, hey, we have this family farm. We're really fortunate. We don't own the family farm here. We talked about when we moved to Pennsylvania, we're managing a piece of what is owned by a whole generation, which is you talked about TD. It's really a special thing if a family is able to keep that, right? A family, a piece of dirt in the family for generations. It's really a special thing. And this family farm, our kids are the fifth generation to work this family farm. So really special. And I know not everybody has that opportunity. We're very, very fortunate. It's 100 beautiful acres of farmland in Pennsylvania. It used to be hay fields and it's good ground, good dirt. So we've told them, hey, you're going to need your first job. You can go work as a clerk. You can ring, items down. That teaches good stuff too, right? Yeah. Your first job, no matter how dead end it might feel, you got to show up for your boss. You got to learn to be yelled at by your manager. All that stuff is good. So I'm not knocking that at all. But if my kids want to, as they get to that point where they need that, we're happy to enable in whatever ways we can. If it's a little pastured goat operation that now becomes monetized, if it's a little, we've started a herd of sheep. We really love lamb in this house. It's one of our favorite meals. So we got a little sheep herd that we've been growing. I'd love to give that to one of my kids to just take and manage and say, listen, I'm going to take my cut of lambs every year to fill the freezer, but you can sell the others and, make some money from that. We've done the pastured chickens. They know how that operation works. I'm happy to see that. So as they get older, they can choose to go work in town. They can go choose to work. Their grandfathers have businesses and construction and, production. They have lots of choices open to them, but we're happy to enable new farmers anytime we can. So
that's great. And I'm from experience, I'm relatively convinced that the best way, from my experience, the best way to raise children, the only way that you can raise children hard, you know, I grew up very middle class, lower middle, like poor. I didn't know we were poor, you know, until I looked back and realized certain things, like, oh, wow, like, we really didn't have any money. And, you know, and I went to the government school and all that stuff. And I'm like, wow, we kind of really grew up poor. And then where we've had as a married couple, we've had so much abundance, and some of it is from a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
Some of it is from the printing press and the quantitative easing and everything else. And that's always been a quest and a consideration, is when you have abundance with, you know, 2024 postmodern America isn't what it used to be, but there is still an inordinate amount of opportunity.
Amazing amount of opportunity.
That speaks, I believe, to liberty and lots of different things. Yep. That's a different podcast for a different day. But how do you raise children hard?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you, to instill that work ethic and to instill responsibility, and, you know, how do you raise children hard amongst abundance? And I believe that an agrarian agriculture, preferably regenerative agriculture lifestyle, is one answer to that question. Is when you have so much abundance and freedom, how do you raise children hard? You do it on a farm.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, because there's that saying, right? I don't remember it off to my head, but I butcher sayings, but it's good times, hard times produce good men, and good times produce bad men, something like that. You guys probably heard it.
Yeah,
we live in very comfortable lifestyles, and you don't want to be the hard, you know, the hard thing your kid has to deal with, right? You want to be a good parent, a supportive parent. But they do need to learn good hard work. And I was very fortunate. I didn't grow up on the farm and I didn't have that. But my dad had his own construction company. And so at 12 years old, I was able to start working with him. I started with, it's snowing outside right now, I started shoveling snow. And I was getting paid $5 an hour, which I thought was great, because by the end of the night, I could buy myself a new Nintendo video game. If I worked 8 hours, I'd have just enough to get it. And I would shovel snow in the middle of the night with the snow blowing, just shovel the walkways, do the whole lap, go back and start over when I was done. And we'd stop for donuts at Dunkin' Donuts. And, you know, every couple hours I'd get a... Yeah. So it was a good way, although it wasn't farm life, I was fortunate to have that experience. And then as I got a little older, I got to work on the construction site, learn good work, hard work from my dad. He was a kid who grew up working really hard with his father building homes. And so my dad's a good hard worker. I got to work next to him and see that. But because of, you know, the world we live in today, you can't usually get your 12 or 13 year old working in construction. It's, you know, first off, you're going to make sure it's a safe situation. And second, it's pretty much, you know, not professionally, not a lot of opportunity for that. So the experience I had, more and more as time goes on, our kids, everyone's kids has less and less chances, less and less opportunities to have that toughness built into them in a healthy way. A farm gives you a healthy toughness. Yeah. You know, you have a parent with an addiction, or you're poor and destitute, that's a different kind of toughness you'll develop, but that's also a negative life that you hope your kids don't have to go through. So the farm gives you all that struggle of going out when it's cold, going out when it's raining, taking care of animals, failure. How many times have we watched an animal we care about get sick, die because of a mistake we made or something we did wrong, or just nature, right? Things happen and you can't stop it. And it's the loss. You deal with the circle of life. The farm teaches so many things in what is pretty much mostly a very safe.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Never, the stakes are never very, you're usually not so high, right? So it's the safest, softest way to give a hard you know, real good hard experience as your kids grow. I totally see what you're saying there, TD. And that's one of the reasons, even as we go on in years and we think, oh, why are we still doing this? You know, why don't we support a younger farmer with dreams and buy chicken from him? But then how are my kids going to learn how to butcher chicken? Yeah. So it's what keeps us every year still doing it is the, you know, even though now we've grown and we could buy pastured poultry, we could buy some pastured beef from someone selling it, we still do it ourselves because now it's just the time working side by side with our kids, the lessons they get from it, and we still get from it ourselves. It's hard. Maybe when all the kids are moved out, me and Kay can become the sponsors of a good young farmer with big dreams, and at that point we'll stop raising our own meat. But I'll always have a pig to eat the table scraps because that's just too easy. So
yeah,
that's very true.
Yeah, we just had 9 cooney piglets.
Yeah, we just had 9
cooney man
piglets born yesterday during the snow,
during the coldest day.
Of course.
And then we got all prepped and prepared because we're like, it's Texas. Whenever snow, a little bit of snow hits the ground, the power always goes out. So the power went out this morning. And I'm like, okay, it's fine. You know, we can, because we had heat lamps and everything out there, keep them warm. So what we did before we turned on the generators is we grabbed the Opez, the 1800 watt one, and we threw it out there and plugged in the 2 heat lamps. But, you know, that thing can only run it for 3 hours, it was saying. So
see the link in the show notes.
So I was like, okay, we got to go get a gas generator fired up. And we already got fuel and everything. And we have 2 generators. So we have the main generator and then a backup generator. So we started up the main generator and it electric start or whatever. Wouldn't start.
Oh no.
That's fine. We got backup generator. So we keep crank, we pour gas in the new one or whatever. And then it just keeps, you know, it has this like auto throttle electric or whatever start. Electric start thing. And it's starting, you know, and it's running. And we tried and it wanted to come on. So I'm just getting frustrated because we got 2 generators here. They're pretty much brand new.
One is brand new.
And I'm thinking, okay, we got one last generator and it's down all the way at the shop. So I'm like, we're going to have to drive the truck down there.
And we have an Austin interview that's taken.
Yeah, I know. So I'm like, I was going to use the Opez to run the Starlink, the internet, and my setup here. But it's running for the pigs right now. And then I quick ran to the incubator that was going, that one in. So I'm like, the Opez's are all used up. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what in the world? So I started getting a little frustrated. But
first world problems.
Then I saw the electric truck come on over to the other pole from the other side of the road. And I'm like, oh, I hope that means the power is going to come on. And then mom like opens up the door and yells, the power's back on.
Yeah. Nice. Phew.
You go over to the power guy. You're like, thank you.
Bringing him farm fresh eggs, right? Or beef or something. Oh man. Yep.
So it was a big reminder that I guess we're just going to have to like every month fire those things up, I guess. And like, I don't know. They both didn't want to start. But it was crazy cold, though. It was pretty cold.
Yeah, and speaking into this whole, like, tough times build good men, you know, and this abundance that we have and raising the next generation, it's so quintessential for, I mean, I live in America. I'm an American.
Yep.
This podcast gets a lot of from all over the globe,
I know,
but it's pretty cool. Yeah. But you know, to carry one, our work ethic forward, our legacy, our liberty, we need to instill all these virtues and attributes this hard way in a loving parental way to instill all these values. And it's going to be so neat when, you know, we have 6 kids and we're seeing them grow and then they're growing into this, to adopting and adapting this lifestyle and being able to carry that forward. And then you're seeing the same thing there's no type of like corporate carrot or pension match or 401k, anything that can even remotely parallel that, even, you know, notoriety, fame, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's so gratifying, satisfying, and fulfilling that it's obviously above any type of mnemonic value of any kind of, you know, monetary value. And that's the real legacy and education is our posterity carrying that forward. It's really the only hope for society all around the world. But it's neat to see people returning to a slower, mm-hmm. purposeful, regenerative agrarian type of lifestyle, and then instilling it into their children to carry it forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And something you said there, TDA, just made me think as they go out, right? They may leave. We have six kids, right? There's a good chance someone's going to wind up in the city at some point. Someone's going to wind up off the farm. My oldest already talked about, oh man, I'm going to move out. I'm not going to have any animals to take care of. And they probably will, at least for a time. Kay left the family farm and she went and lived in an apartment. And then we got married and we were in an apartment. But that hard work, that good hard work ethic, those core values, the overcoming trials like you guys had this morning, right? Generator one, generator two. In life, generator one, generator two break all the time. You need generator three. And that kind of, you know, never say die, that determination that you get on the farm where it's just, you know what, lives are on the line. And when generator one and two go down, you figure out how to get generator three up. That will help our kids and everyone who bumps shoulders with them. That will help them be better prepared for all the crazy stuff. The world, what the slogan of our podcast is, the world is a crazy place, but you and me, we can each make it a little better. And that was 14 years ago that we wrote that slogan. The world is a crazy place, but you and me, we can make it a little better, because with all of our kids, everyone we bump shoulders with, getting a bit more self-sufficient, a bit more regenerative, right? It's just everyone who bumps shoulders with them is going to be a bit better off. They're going to be a bit better off on the farm or not. You know, wherever they go, they'll be better prepared. And that, when you, as you know, when you start to think beyond your own, you're now thinking of your kids and they're taking the torch wherever it goes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they might not have goats to care for, but they'll have something to care for and they'll know how to do it when it gets hard. They'll be able to push through because of that farm life, because it always gets hard.
Speaking of generators and craziness, your newest venture is into this off-grid lifestyle. So maybe you could dive into that just for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
I'm loving this new segment and this off-grid stuff and your series, crazy venture to Alaska, which was very daring. and I highly encourage everyone to follow this along because it's rather... This was serious.
It was serious.
Yeah, we are, I said back at the beginning, we were both, Kay and I, when we first met, were people who loved travel. We loved adventure and we're never afraid. Before we had kids, we did some crazy, you know, South America, riding boats up the Amazon River, flying planes into the bush. Like, we loved far. I spent some nights sleeping in a hammock in Jaguar country. Just love that kind of stuff. It was just really fun adventures. And as we had a family and little babies, that slowed a lot. You don't want to sleep in Jaguar country in a hammock when you got little babies. But we've always had this sense of adventure. And one thing we do on our channel and in our homestead, Kay and I both, we are not people who like, if funny enough, as someone who, she loves her milk cows, we don't love doing the same thing every day. We don't, you know, just want to care for the chickens and the cows every day for our whole life. We like to try new things. And you guys have watched us a long time. So, you know, every livestock you can imagine on a farm and a few you can't have been here. Camels, anybody, right? We've tried all kinds of crazy stuff. Haven't even seen it on the channel yet. We now have a water buffalo out back here. So we're always trying something new. We like to... learn. We love learning. And one of the biggest things we've done all these years on our channel is we learn along with us. And as I kind of talked about, over the years, we've gotten really good at the meat thing and living off the land and the pasturing the animals. We've had a lot of big success there over time. But we're not afraid to dive in the deep end again of a new area and learn more. And the biggest glaring piece of self-sufficiency all these years, when I look out my window, which is I'm sitting in my office and I can look out my window, the thing I see us missing the most all these years has been energy. Energy production. We are very, now of course the sun grows the grass and we make a lot off the grass. But when it comes to our energy usage, running the lights, you know, all that stuff, we've been very, very dependent. And we do like to be more resilient. We do like to be more self-sufficient. Our goal has never really been 100% self-sufficiency. And the more we dive into that topic and discover, as I think everybody in this lifestyle learns, it's very unattainable, 100% self-sufficiency. Yeah. That's why you form community. That's why you grow, right? You network. Yeah. But we have found over the years, way back when we very first had this dream of a little remote property with a yurt on it, we weren't planning on going off grid back then because we were afraid the grid was going to go down and the world was going to end. We were doing it because off grid seemed like a tool to make our dreams happen. One thing you learn when you're shopping for land is land that has road access, that has a power line run to it, that has sewer. The price tag goes up with every additional utility that's there ready to go. You find a weird little piece of property with no driveway and no power lines and no sewer, it's going to be a lot cheaper to purchase. Yeah. Now, it might not be a lot cheaper to develop, but if you're not afraid to do the work and you can get creative, and more as we see with like these solar panels and the solar generators and wind turbines and water, everything's getting better. It's all getting a little bit better. So more and more it's becoming where you can make a piece of property. And one of the biggest ways you can make it work, we've learned with our recent diving into, we shared on the channel, we started developing a property we're calling Sunny Mountain, is an off-grid property we started working on. We got a quote to get power lines run to Sunny Mountain, $60,000. To get power lines run to where we would need it. Yeah. You can put in a pretty nice solar system for $50,000 or $40,000. Yeah. I can put 10, 20, maybe 30 grand back in my pocket. And now that actually has paid for itself. That makes sense. Yeah. That's dollars and cents. So, you know, if you want to go off grid because you're afraid of the grid going down, hey, that's great. If that's your motivation, it's never really been our motivation. We like being more self-sufficient. We like having a bit more control and understanding our systems. But I also like putting 20 grand back in my pocket. And off-grid can be a tool to do things like that. Now, you're going to spend money elsewhere and doing different things. But we also do value the self-sufficiency. And this is part of what we've learned now. We started developing this property, Sunny Mountain. And we realized, you know what? We want to develop an off-grid property, but holy cow, 14, 15 years of homesteading, we have all kinds of experience. I can tell you how to cut up a chicken every which way, but that doesn't mean I know anything about solar power. That doesn't mean I know anything about, you know, kilowatts and how long the lights are going to stay on. We realized we had a gaping hole in our knowledge when it came to off-grid life. And so we thought, you know, why are we going to go design an off-grid homestead and develop an off-grid homestead? We've seen this play out before. We shared the story on our channel. When we designed our very first garden at our very first farm, it was a one-acre market garden. It was huge, and it grew 1 acre plus worth of weeds like you can't believe.
Yeah.
Great weed harvest from that garden. But we never got even a single tomato because we designed a garden not knowing what we were doing. Why are we going to do the same mistake again? We've seen this movie. Why are we going to design an off-grid homestead with zero experience? So we decided, you know what? Let's get some experience. Let's dive in the deep end, learn as much as we can. And because we do our show, not only will we learn hands-on living it, but we'll also go talk to the experts. We'll see people, we'll learn from them. And we decided on Alaska, multiple reasons. A lot of people are like, why'd you go all the way to Alaska? One of the big reasons was because there are off-grid people everywhere. You guys know in Texas, there's people off-grid. There's people off-grid in Tennessee. There's people off-grid, I'm sure, in Pennsylvania. We have people off-grid. There's people off-grid everywhere. In Alaska, off-grid is a way of life for a large population. I don't want to say the majority, but it's just part of life in Alaska. There are entire neighborhoods that are all off-grid. Everybody's off-grid. So they have it down to a way of life. Now, it's very also specific to long winters, you know, lots of sunlight in the summer, not in the winter. It's extreme. And there's a lot that's specific to Alaska in that way. But also, you got everybody understands off-grid necessity and life and how to overcome challenges. So we thought, what if we go and we spend the summer living off-grid in Alaska? And we found a couple different places. It's amazing what you can find if you're looking. We found not just one, but a couple different places we could go and essentially either like house sit or very low rental to do like agricultural leasing or whatever. A few different opportunities of places we could go and stay for the summer in Alaska off grid. They were super rustic. We went actually back in March of last year, we went and previewed a couple. We went to different properties and looked at different places and thought like, can we stay here with the kids? Will this work? We finally settled on one cabin, which we've been sharing on the channel. Spoiler alert, we started referring to it. Well, the kids started referring to it as the dreaded A-frame. Incredibly rustic, very small, very hard. That was a very hard period of time. And we have always really, really tried on our channel because I did not grow up on a farm. I did not grow up as a homesteader. I don't have that farm kid toughness in me. I came to the world of homesteading and I have many, many days been out there pulling my hair out. I'm fortunate I have a pretty thick head of hair because I'd probably be bald if I didn't. Pulling it all out, just like, what am I doing? Frustrated, angry, sad. Because it's really hard, right? There are days where it's just so hard, whether it's on-grid or off-grid. Homesteading can be so hard. So we've always tried to share. We know having this channel and this podcast, we inspire people. We get people who are like, you know what? I'm quitting my job. I'm selling my house, my apartment. I'm moving to the country. And we do not want anyone to come to us and say, you guys said this was amazing and I did it and I hated it. We'd much rather have people come to us and say, you guys have always been honest and shared the ups and downs. And I knew what I was getting into. And then I quit my job and everything and went and did it. So we've always been very honest and open about the struggles and the hard times. And we have shared this Alaska Off-Grid series. We've called it the Alaska Off-Grid Challenge. We wanted to see if we could make it the entire summer without quitting, living off-grid in very rustic, very hard circumstances. It was really hard. And there have been people who've commented and been like, this is fake, guys. You've been homesteading for 15 years. There's no way it was this hard for you.
I love the haters. That's one of the great things about social media.
Right, right. I don't even know what to say to that because it's like off-grid life is so different. And there are other people who come and say, guys, off-grid life, you can have a really nice off-grid house. There's people on YouTube with these huge, amazing places. And that's true. You can. And we're not stupid. We know, like, yeah, you can spend a fortune and have an amazing off-grid place. You could spend nothing and have a horrible place. And there's a sweet spot in the middle where you spend some money and you get a pretty good setup. But we wanted to see, could we do the most rustic? And when you take a family who we're not afraid of hard work and we've been homesteading a long time, but we flick the switch, the light comes on, right? I turn the lights on before I get in the studio. I have chest freezers I don't worry about. When it's butcher day, I fire up a meat saw and I push the pigs through the meat saw. You take that kind of homesteading and farming and you go so rustic that we're cooking outside in the rain. There's no outhouse.
Yeah.
It was really hard. And we were very honest about it. And most people have really, really enjoyed that open honesty about how we thought we were really tough and we're going to have no problem with this. And it was so hard. The change to that really, really rustic life in the very small cabin was so much harder than we expected. Now we're about halfway through the series. And we know how the story ends. I can't spoil it.
Yeah. Well, thank you we can see you, so we know that.
I did survive. yeah, we learned a lot. And as you start, if you're following along in the journey, everything is in the beginning. You ride a bike in the beginning, you're going to fall, you're going to get hurt, you're going to cry. Yep. Everything is hard in the beginning. The reward comes to those who push. Yeah. And we learned a lot. There's a shift happening. As you start to watch the next episode or two, you'll start to see there's a shift that happens. And we start to hit a stride. And this is where things get really exciting. And we'll keep sharing that. This series isn't over. We're about halfway through the Alaska series. We've done some incredible interviews. We got to talk to people who live off-grid with big families. We talked to people who live off-grid, you know, do part-time off-grid stuff. We saw all kinds of cabins and setups. People have very rustic off-grid lives. People who can do everything off-grid and have the whole kit and caboodle and just live a normal life without paying an electric bill. And it was just honestly one of the peak experiences of both of our lives. Kay and I, we got to spend a summer in Alaska with our family in some of the most remote country I've ever been in, where like our nearest neighbor, the nearest other person, took 15 minutes of driving to get to pass a house from our one cabin. Nothing but moose and bear around us. And as far as the eye could see, just beautiful hillsides of the Alaska wild. And it's an experience that has changed me forever. And, you know, leave you with the hook there. Find out what happens next. Cliffhanger, there it is. Yeah. It was incredible.
I'm looking forward to this because you bring a lot of, you know, real reality and you're very honest, because we've been considering, we want to, the boys have an off-grid shop and we use a combination of electric generators and a gas generator. And we've been considering solar for a very long time. We have the means to do a solar setup. I may even have a solar sponsor, but the problem is you watch all of these solar people and, well, that was the old battery, and now there's this new iron battery, and then you'll need the new inverter, and then this new panel.
Yeah.
And where I am with solar is like, I want we're at a very unique time with these plug and play stackable units that I think is really what's like going to
EcoFlow.
Yeah, totally revolutionized.
Opez just came out with the Mega 5.
Yeah. It's going to totally revolutionize solar as we know it. Big time. And I'm going to be real curious to see what y'all.
And it's stupid proof too.
Yeah.
It's idiot proof.
That's nice.
Yeah. That's
just
what I need.
Plug, play. Good. Yeah.
When it comes to, hear me too. I am with you guys. It's an interesting time, especially if you're motivated towards the off-grid life. And one of the things we're going to explore, especially in the next part of this series, and even beyond, because we actually, it's where we go with our Alaska journey. The off-grid challenge was Alaska, but it also was 8 human beings in Alaska who actually live in the lower 48 and have to get home with all their stuff. So the last part, it's a three-act, this is a three-act story. There's the first act, which is the dreaded A-frame, and we've just completed that act, which we just got our butt kicked. And if you've been watching, you know it. We just got our butt kicked and we shared it on YouTube. And for a few weeks, we had to just shut the comments off because it's like, yes, we know. We didn't do good. We know. Thank you. The next act is us overcoming some trials, but then we have to come home. So we travel from Alaska all the way back to Lower 48, and we do this. We interview people along the way who are off-grid. We still see more off-grid setups. And, of course, we stay along the way the most off-grid, the whole experience, just camping. We camp in the Yukon country. We camp in BC. We camp in Montana. We camp in Yellowstone. Now, I'm not going to lie. We also stayed in a hotel here or there. Some nights you just need a shower. Sure. But For most of the trip home, it would be a couple nights camping, then a big long day of travel, hit a hotel, then another day of travel, a couple more nights camping, another hop over, a night in a tent. We had these, some tents we would throw out. They were like a pop-up tent. You'd throw them, they'd spring up. And then we had another, a nice big tent. Sometimes we get to a really cool place. Like we got to Yellowstone and we're like, we got to stay a couple days at Yellowstone. So we popped the big tent up. We take our time. Woke up one morning with a 6x6 bull elk right outside the tent. I got video like right out of my tent window of this 6x6 elk, just right there. Giant. It's amazing. But all along the way, we're still learning and going to see things and talking to people. And one of the big questions that we're going to tackle in this series, one of the big things that we had to come to terms with is when it comes to off-grid, so many people go to that lifestyle because of self-sufficiency and independence. Sure. And one of the scary truths that we find along the way is a lot of these off-grid systems, you become, in a, just a different way, incredibly dependent on a different grid. So maybe the you're not on the electric grid, but you're on a battery producing grid, which you guys just talked about. When your battery breaks, and it will break, you're still dependent on that grid. And we talked with, so one of the things to look forward to on the way home, we talked to Gridlessness. I don't know if you guys watch that channel, but great, great YouTube channel. Jeff from Gridlessness. He has been someone I have followed for years. I interviewed him way, way back when we first moved to Pennsylvania. He was one of our first video podcasts. I've been watching him over the years since then. And I always look at Jeff and say, you know, people look at our channel and say, you guys are living the life I want. I want to do that. And I understand that it's a dream and we're very fortunate to have this life. I look at Jeff and say, that guy's living the life I want, because he's gridless. He's off grid completely in BC, and he's mining for gold and hunting bull elk and fishing for salmon. And I'm like, that is my style of homesteading. I like livestock, but salmon and gold, that's me. I love that. But we actually got to interview him on the road, and he works in the electric grid. Like, he's an engineer who works on this stuff. And he talked at length in our interview. It's one of my favorite interviews of the whole series. He talked about how, about this problem with off-gridness, off-grid life, and dependence. And he shared some really, really good ways to truly be off-grid.
Awesome.
Whether or not you're on solar power. So that's another teaser there. Stay tuned. That episode is probably months away. So you have to hang in there for it. But our production is very slow because these episodes are really, really, as you guys mentioned, high edit, high production. So we're doing about one a month right now. Jeff's is coming, but it's one of the best ones in the whole series. I can't wait to share it because I learned a lot about our goals with off-grid life, what we were looking for versus realities. I learned a lot from Jeff, and he is off-grid. His channel is called Gridlessness. Like, he loves the lifestyle, but he was very, very eye-opening about some of the realities of off-grid life. And so a lot of good stuff coming.
You set the hook very deep.
I am a fisherman. I've been a fisherman a long time, so I know. Yeah.
Well, this has been awesome. I will obviously put all your links below, but where can everybody find you, Austin?
If you search Homesteady, you'll find us. And whatever you're into, if it's podcasts, we have 10 years worth of podcasts now. There's 100 plus, maybe 200 episodes to dive into. If you like YouTube videos, we have almost 1,000. I've trimmed down in over the years we try to keep the best stuff out there, the quality stuff. We have a website, thisishomesteady.com. We have a membership program. If you're serious, like, I really want to homestead and dive in deep to the educational stuff, we have that too. But there's plenty of free stuff. And on whatever platform you like, we do audio. I love to talk. I never shut up. So there's something to me talking somewhere on the internet. You'll find it.
That's awesome. That's great. This has been a blast. We really appreciate you investing our time here. And this is a value for value proposition. So if you love the type of content and the people that we bring to you, please go on over to thetexasboys.com. The Food Forest in a Box is still available for now. Act now.
Yep. And there's also, you can go ahead and get over at thetexasboys.com. We sell local on filtered, unpasteurized honey and all types of different types of coffee, from CBD coffee to Lion's Mane coffee to all different types of flavored coffee. And then we sell all types of different teas and the native mud brew and all types of great stuff over there. Go check it out if you want to support what we do here on the podcast. But another great way to support this podcast is leaving a 5-star rating wherever you are listening to this. And we do highly recommend for y'all to go check out the Fountain app and go listen over there.
I listen to Homesteady on the Fountain app.
Oh, yeah. So Fountain app is awesome.
Fountain app is where it's at. So thanks for hanging out, y'all. Thanks for coming along on the journey. Check out Homesteady. If you're interested or curious about off-grid, this new series is next level.
Oh, it is.
I am waiting for every episode. Thanks so much again, Aust, for your time. Hey, Aust, any closing thoughts? We've talked about a lot, but any closing thoughts?
Yeah. Okay. So people listen to our shows because they want to do this, right? And we talked about how long, right? You guys have been in this journey a long time. We've been in this journey a long time. And you look at what we have now and you say, oh man, someday, right? Someday. Someday happens through a failed garden and, you know, missing deer, right? So our message to everybody always, we try to be inspiring. We try to be honest. Our slogan at Homesteady is just start. So it's January. It's a great time to say, you know what? I've been listening to Texas Boys for a while. I've been watching them and all the cool stuff they're doing. I've been listening to Homesteady, right? I want to do some of this stuff. This year, one thing, make it a failed garden. You know, your neighbor can weed whack the tomatoes. Just start.
I love it.
There you go.
I love it. And with that, y'all, stay fearless, all right, my friends. Thank you.